it was they wanted people to know about how we can keep things, moving in a positive direction. The thing that every single one of them pointed out was this need to think about how we are resourcing the work that is going to go on to continue to move, abortion rights, reproductive health rights forward in a positive and inclusive way.
Thank you again, Liz, so much for joining us today and for the work that you've done to put this book forward.
Thank you for being a part of it, Sonali. We're so grateful.
My guest has been Elizabeth Hines, author and editor. She edited the new book, Aftermath: Life in Post-Roe America. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Kitsap. Like us on facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing, unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm.
Hey, yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja, and we have a special show for you today. If you've been paying attention to our show or paying attention to the media, our humble show has had some national and international light shone upon it. And obviously, there's a lot of stories in the media that you can check out. Feel free. And obviously, we need to talk about that on this show, exactly what it means, and our future as a show, because there's a lot more momentum in this space for us right now. And we're really excited about that. We're really excited about all the changes that we can help make in this country, the conversations that we can start and help people have in their homes, etc. But that is still something that we have to wait on. Those conversations that we would love to have with you. So in the meantime, there's a couple of things that we wanted to share with you, not the least of which is sort of a conversation that started this whole thing. Q and I were fortunate enough to go to LA and sit down with our mentor, Big Boy, a legendary broadcaster in the hip hop space, if you're not familiar. And he gave us a great interview out there. And so I'd love to share that with you today, just to kind of bring you up to speed if you haven't been paying attention to the media. And if you have been, to kind of give you a bit of an origin story of the show and some of the current things that are happening in this space. And also, we were fortunate enough to speak with one Isaac Hayes III, the owner of Fanbase. And so the second half of the show, we're going to shine some light on black business, supporting black business, kind of black people's influence over the culture, the popular culture, and how social media affects our ability to communicate, our ability to make money, areas that require improvement, etc. So we'd love for you to stick around for both of those conversations. We feel like they're both very important. And of course, we are going to be back with more Civic Cypher very soon, but this is the space that we're in right now. And yeah, we hope you enjoy it. So I'll be back after we talk to Big Boy. So enjoy. Big Boy's Neighborhood, beautiful day in the neighborhood, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes, man, you come across some things, you come across some beautiful people. And for those that do know, then you know. And for those that don't, I would love to make this introduction as well. Now, first off, Ramses, I've met you years ago.
Yeah.
You didn't need anything from me. I didn't need anything from you. You were just a solid brother that I met years ago, man. And I love the way that, you know, character is what's being said about you when you're not in the room. And people speak so well about your character. So now that I see you moving forward and I see you never stopped your hustle, never stopped your grind, you got 50,000 things that you're doing and 4999 of them, or 999 of them, you're doing very well. I don't know what that one is. But welcome to the neighborhood, Ramses.
I appreciate it.
All right, and this is Q Ward.
Q Ward.
And together we are
Civic Cypher.
Yes, sir.
What is Civic Cypher?
Civic Cypher is a radio show and a podcast,
yes,
that
sir,
was born out of the protests of, mm-hmm, 2020. Basically what happened was, you know, we're both DJs. We both work in radio, me and Q. Where we were at our old radio station in Phoenix, Arizona, in 2020, we're out protesting. We felt like the leadership on the streets really deserved more than just bullhorns.
Right.
And in order to challenge the narrative of what was being sort of chronicled on television stations and other media outlets, to let folks say their piece in terms of explaining what defund the police means or why people are upset about Breonna Taylor or, you know, these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
We felt like, okay, well, we work in media. We work in hip hop media. This is, you know, black culture being consumed, you know, in a city where it's black and brown mostly consuming this culture. We need to be able to say our piece as well. And basically we went to our station program director and asked to set aside 30 minutes per week in the middle of the night where there's no money involved, mm-hmm, and just let the leadership on the streets.
Why did you feel like that was important to you guys?
Well, you know, there was no voice. There was, right, just people on the street. There was huge crowds,
right,
but no way to reach the city. People that weren't able to come out. And, you know, bullhorns only go so far, so,
right,
some people weren't getting the message. So it was up to us to try to make that difference and make that space. So
and such a real time, bro. At 2020, it looked like things were just crazy. You know, we had a, yeah, pandemic, something that we'd never seen before. We're watching people die in front of us.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? On TV repeatedly watching footage. And so when you do, like some people also Q Ward, where some people say, you know what, man, I'll do what I do on the mic. Sometimes they don't go a little further, or they just wait for the next leader. Like you can have a plan. You can feel like you're like, man, this is really horrible. But then we wait for the next person. You guys didn't wait. Well, you know what I'm saying?
Sometimes, Big, you feel like you need permission.
Right.
You need somebody to tell you it's okay to be dynamic or to step out in front of it. And like he said, when you got the bullhorn on the street, a few hundred people can hear you.
Mm-hmm.
But you turn on the news and they're calling protesters looters and rioters.
Right, right. The narrative is different.
And those people can't speak their part. So that's why the conversation with the station was, look, we are profiting off of black culture. People from that culture should have a voice and be able to say something about what they're dealing with out in the streets. And since we're out there and we see it, we felt like we could lend that voice to the people that were marching next to us, black, white, Hispanic, mm-hmm, Asian, and otherwise.
But you see now, and you fast forward to 2022, almost going into 2023, you know, a lot of the bullhorns, the batteries done died in them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen the signs that were held up. Those are somewhere in the garage. It was like, you know, there was a reason, but it was also a season.
Mm.
You guys went past the season.
Sure.
You know, so why is it important to continue what you do?
Well, you know, in the spirit of, I want to shout out Dr. Camilla Westenberg. She's my college mentor. In the spirit of the Panthers, in the spirit, mm-hmm, of Dr. King, in the spirit of Malcolm X, in the spirit of, you know, Marcus Garvey, in the spirit of, you know, Stokely Carmichael, all these names that we grew up learning about, James Baldwin, it comes to mind. We realized that this is a long fight. This isn't something,
right,
that we can just get out there for a couple of years, say a couple of names, and then it's over. You know, we have to stand on the legacy and the history of our leaders before us. And nobody was doing what we were doing what we're doing now in the space that we're doing it. In other words, we're more than just rappers and singers and dancers. Mm-hmm. We are thinkers, we are leaders, we are people that love our children, we love our families, we love our communities, we want our communities to be strengthened. You know, I'm born in California. You know, I grew up around all different types of people. And, you know, doing radio in Arizona, it whittles it down just a bit. So it's just really Black and Latino out there, yeah, in terms of minorities, and we're all we got in terms of marginalized folks. And so, again, seeing that unity in the streets, being able to kind of capture that moment and project it into the future and really have a place where if something else happens, folks can come and say their piece. We'll hold the space for you. We'll hold the microphone for you. You can come and talk.
And where do we find Civic Cypher now?
You can find Civic Cypher at civiccypher.com.
Yes, sir. Cleverly hated there. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, cleverly hated there.
We've also partnered with iHeartMedia, and that's another thing that I'd love to talk about. But we are found on 30 stations around the country. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll be able to talk to Mr. Winter and talk about getting a presence here in LA very soon. But yeah, the show is growing. We're in the process of negotiating an additional effectively doubling our footprint in terms of stations around the country. So hopefully by the beginning of next year, we'll have that situated. But
How did the relationship start?
So it started, of course, out of DJing, mm-hmm, but that was something that Ramses saw that I didn't. I had just moved back to Phoenix from Detroit, mm-hmm, and was looking for something to do career-wise. And Ramses had met me when I was working for Moet Hennessy. The radio station would cover our advertising. And Ramses wrote a letter to LVMH just about the type of professional I was. And wow, when I saw the letter, my boss forwarded it to me. Ramses and I had just met in Crossing. We didn't have a personal relationship. When I saw that he put pen to paper to vouch for me to this French company, you know, thousands of miles away, and they were so impressed by that, the next time I saw him, I had to make sure I didn't just shake his hand, but that I put my arms around him and let him know how far that went. Then I then moved to Spain, moved to Toronto. And when I got back to Phoenix, the first person I reached out to was Ramses. And he was like, man, you might want to try these turntables out. I thought it was a ridiculous idea. But
so had you DJed before?
Never. Never. I had never even thought about it or considered it.
Really?
And Ramses said, look,
I would have hated to have been at the club when you were first starting. Jesus Christ.
That's a funny story.
He left me hanging when I first started.
Really? So Ramses, throw him in the water, bro. Yeah, they'll swim.
His thing was buy some turntables and I'll teach you how to DJ. He wanted me to make that first investment. He could have just gave me some turntables. He had plenty. But he wanted me to make that investment to know that I was serious. Invited me to the club for the first time. Told me he had to go to the bathroom.
Oh, no.
And stayed going to the bathroom for 30 minutes.
Yeah, I remember that's when his bowels were bad. I remember Ramses, every time I talk to him, like, yeah, Unc, I'm in the restroom. But you saw something in him, possibly, sure, that at the moment, no matter how much shine or no matter how much we, you know our self-worth, sometimes someone else will see something else in you.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. You know what I'm saying? You saw that in Q War.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I heard that and didn't suppress it.
No. Amen.
And isn't it crazy how some people, like, you'll get folks that'll say, okay, well, you know, LeBron James, shut up and dribble. They're, you know, and then it could just be spin the record, don't say nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, man, we don't understand how powerful this microphone is.
Exactly.
And how powerful this voice is. Mm-hmm. And what you do with this microphone and with the voice.
Yes, sir.
All of us can bring in the next Drake record. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But it's what we do between those records and what we do aside those records. Mm-hmm. So when you do see certain things happen in our community, bro, people, not that they expect us to say something, but we should expect us, me, you, to say something.
Right.
You know, and we went through... not even just 2020, bro. When you sit here and you go down that list, it's been a fight for a long time.
Yes, sir.
And there's absolutely no time to give it up, no matter how many decades, no matter if it's a century, whatever it is, because those problems still exist today.
Exactly.
And we do need the entertainment. Mm-hmm. We do need everything that we're playing, but we also need a balance.
Right.
And what happens today, man, is... we don't have a lot of the leaders. Mm. And then when we do have the leaders, they don't get the platforms. Mm. You know, so that's why we got to continue to make sure that our voices are used and we take care of our platform.
Yeah.
And our platform also tells people what's going on. We right here, we're in primaries, we're voting. And sometimes, man, we don't get the message unless the message comes from us.
Yeah. Right.
So continue doing the message, man.
Right,
continue
right.
getting that out there.
Speaking of platforms,
he pushed me in the water with this too, Big.
Oh, really?
So when he went to the station about us doing a show to give our people a voice, you'd never believe what our hip hop station said to us. Sorry, Ramses. We don't want to do a black show.
The hip hop station.
The hip hop station.
Y'all not no longer there though, right?
No.
Oh, we can kill them.
They could have said we don't want to do a political show. They could have said we don't want to do a polarizing show. They said we don't want to do a black show. And Ramses was in this meeting by himself. I wasn't present. Ramses resigned for both of us that day.
Damn.
And he knew that I would stand with him. Wrote a resignation letter to the city of Phoenix. And we couldn't look at our sons
right.
after these people then told us we don't want to do a black show on the hip hop station to the only black yeah. on air talent in Phoenix.
And who you're speaking with as well.
Yes.
Who you're speaking to.
Which
is crazy. And we've seen this so-called genre and we've seen our lifestyle. Man, it plays all the way across.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that to you in the room
mm-hmm.
and you resigned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote again, like you said, I wrote the letter to the city of Phoenix, and then that letter ended up getting shared and shared and shared. So it made the radio trades, and that's how a lot of radio folks ended up reaching out. My first station was KKFR in Phoenix, so shout out to DJ Complex, Ben Romero. But then other stations around the country reached out. We got on in Tucson. That was our first connection wow. with iHeart, so shout out Steve Earnhardt, and then you know, the rest of the country.
Is it a different battle? You know how sometimes you got to push some things uphill because it's not, you know, it's not fun. It's not,
yeah,
it's ignorant. It's not, yeah.
yeah.
It's a whole different thing as opposed to, you know, I want to do the shoot 'em up hour.
So this is another thing to your point about the platform. So, we did, a gentleman named Tony Coles reached out, from iHeart, the CEO level stuff, you know. And he heard about what we were doing. He's like, hey, we got a partner on some stuff. But I would like you to do some other things with iHeart too. Enter the Black Information Network. Mm-hmm. So I've been working with them for the better part of a year on a daily podcast for the Black Information Network where I interview folks from Roland Martin, mm-hmm. you know, and it gives me some credibility with respect to Civic Cypher, the radio show, but it also kind of helps me to network and expand and then off and diversify what it is I can bring to the table on the radio in the hip hop space. In terms of platforms, Q has acquired within the same time frame, I believe, the imprint, the media imprint, Hip Hop Weekly. So Hip Hop Weekly magazine that you're familiar with, now he owns that. So in terms of like procuring our platforms and making sure that we have the stages so we can mm-hmm. tell our stories and have our voices.
For us, by
I don't
us.
Want to speak for
yes,
you.
Sir. So talk to me about Hip Hop Weekly.
So the magazine had laid a bit dormant, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Oh,
they
yeah.
never went away, but they stopped print and they stopped running original content. It's just a bunch of shared content. And we knew that that imprint, people know the imprint.
Yeah, and it means something to us.
Yes. So being able to, like you said, and like Ramses said, give our people a platform. You know, I can employ writers, journalists, freelancers that want to share stories, that want to develop their craft, and that want to put something credible on their resume in the journalism space and the mm-hmm. photography space and in the music creation space, being able to take new artists and blast their music off to millions of people that maybe otherwise wouldn't have heard it. I wanted us to be able to have some control over our own voices and how far they could reach. You know?
And how is Hip Hop Weekly now? Is it still print or is it more so?
It's more digital now.
Yeah.
And we're considering going back to print because some of our brothers and sisters who are, you know,
yeah.
away,
uh-huh.
that's how they keep in touch with the world and with the culture. So we have several tens of thousands of subscriptions that just stopped being filled. So those people mm-hmm. don't have that bridge that they used to have. So we're looking at making sure our brothers and sisters that are down get some light, get some inspiration, and get some information, and then just rejuvenating the digital space as well, from the website to social media, to those people that follow Hip Hop Weekly magazine. We got some fresh new content coming for you, mm-hmm. Some fresh new voices, a bunch of young creators that want to get involved. So it's something that's really exciting.
Hey man, with so many voices being heard, and now at one point it was, okay, you got something from radio, you got something from television. There was, you know, back in the days, it was a few news outlets. You had newspapers. Now with this device, everybody has a voice, rightfully so. But that voice also means that everybody has something to say. And sometimes people are saying bullshit.
Yes, sir.
And you get that. when you do have a voice and your voice talks to your audience, and then you have another voice that can talk to the masses, like a Kanye West. And when we see Kanye West with a White Lives Matter shirt, not having a conversation, I still don't know what it means. But looking at it and then watching some of the interviews that he's, you know, done in the last couple of or few days, he's doubled and tripled down on it. Yeah. We had a brief conversation about White Lives Matter, the actual shirt, the slogan, All Lives. And you brought something to my attention, y'all did, that blew me away right now.
So it's a funny story. The federal trademark for White Lives Matter is not owned by Kanye West. At present, it is owned by Civic Cypher LLC.
And Civic Cypher is?
Us, me and Q.
Yes. How did that happen?
So so let me tell you. So there's an individual who is based in Arizona that had the foresight to procure the trademarks, the federal trademarks, for the benefit of Black and brown people, so that other folks wouldn't profit off of it. And this person knows about what Q and I are doing. This person trademarked White Lives Matter and submitted the application for All Lives Matter as well. So we're still chasing that one up, but White Lives Matter has come back.
To Civic Cypher.
Right. Wow. And it has since been, well, it was originally filed in that person's name, has been since reassigned to us. So actually we just got the receipt from our lawyer today. So shout out to Morris for taking care of that for us. But Civic Cypher LLC. So we are the holder of the federal trademark for White Lives
Matter. And what would that mean?
So that means that the only person who can profit off of it, not make shirts, because you can make a shirt and wear it, and that's your right as an American citizen. But if you want to sell that shirt, you either have to come knock on my door, or you have to face Morris, my lawyer, who is the person that helps me protect that brand. And now that it is in our care, we can decide how it benefits the Black community, the brown community, you know, everyone, to be honest with you. And it brings us all together. It doesn't matter if you're in the white tribe or not, something that benefits all of us. But of course, we like to focus where there's the greatest need. And oftentimes we find that in Black and brown communities. So if you ever see that shirt for sale, just know that.
Well, I'm calling.
Yeah.
Call me what you want.
Please.
You know what I'm saying? All right, Ramses. You won't believe what I'm
saying. Speaking of which, I'll add to it that Morris did send out, I believe it was either Morris or our other lawyer, sent out cease and desist to some of the sites that were selling bootleg stuff. So we sent out about 25 C&Ds. That would have been yesterday. And then today we got the registration, the reassignment.
And also with being Black Information Network, how do we find you there? And how do we find the actual Civic Cypher podcast?
Sure. So Civic Cypher, you can go to civiccypher.com and tap in. We're at Civic Cypher on all social media. Civic Cypher, we own the federal trademark for that.
And how often do y'all do Civic Cypher?
It's a weekly show.
Okay.
It's an hour a week. So just on your local station, petition your local stations to carry Civic Cypher. Help us on our way. For the Black Information Network daily podcast, you can go to iHeart.com. I'm under all the tabs, the podcast tabs. So if you're into news, click news. I'm right next to Katie Couric. My face and my afro.
You damn
right. If you click Black Culture, I'm next to Charlamagne. There you go. Yeah. Thanks, Big. We're trying to do something. I do believe that love should be at the center of the narrative. Forgiveness should be at the center of the narrative. I'm not the hugest fan of being angry in spaces like that. I believe that healing kind of gets us a little bit further. And both Q and I really have done our best to have conversations that start and end on those points. And so tap in with me, tap in with Q at Hip Hop Weekly, the Black Information Network, of course, BINnews.com, and Civic Cypher. We're doing our best to try to make the world a little bit
better.
And
how
place.
Long have y'all been
rocking in the free world?
Yeah,
Q.
17, 18 years.
Really?
It's been a while.
And Q, how long you been DJing?
I started DJing in 2010.
Right. And when did you start DJing?
Oh, Ramses. Man. He said he started in 2010. He didn't say that he's the Phoenix Suns DJ.
Yeah.
Was
I
the last
saw that.
Season? Phoenix Suns DJ. Okay.
Were you DJing at a Phoenix and Four game when dude put hands on that?
Yes, sir. I got to go to the finals.
Yeah.
Got to bring my kids on the court during the finals. Man, it was a really cool experience. With the Suns for 3 years. Stepped away after last season. So I'm, just kind of just in this space now.
Yeah,
Civic Cypher it's become far more important Like you said, the season passed for everybody to be involved in the movement, but we have an obligation to the people to keep doing this. It's not something we can just sit down.
Right. Say we did our part.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, fold the sign up.
Not
believe that. Well, man, thank you guys for coming in and sharing y'all presence with me as well.
Yes, sir.
And Ramses, you know anything you need on my end, brother. You know, aside from money. You know what I'm saying? No, let me know what's happening, brother. You've always been more than one thou wow with me, bro. And so it's just a pleasure to see what you guys are doing.
Real quick, before I get out of here, man, I'm gonna send you the video, man. You sent you when the first time I met you in person, you recorded a video for me. It was in Arizona in front of a casino.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm gonna text it to you. And you did a shout out, sounded just like that. And man, I incorporated that shout out into every air check, every video air check I ever sent out. Yes, man. So you are like
how
my
long ago
hero,
was that,
man.
Ramses?
Probably 2008, maybe.
That's crazy.
So I've been riding that wave ever since, man. So it's an honor to be here.
Man, it's an honor to be in y'all presence.
We appreciate you always.
Appreciate you, man. And like we say, man, we got to put it together.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
if mine needs, you know, that information, let it be known. I can get it out there.
Absolutely.
And the same when I need to holler at y'all, man. But thank you guys.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate y'all, man. Y'all stick around Big Boy's Neighborhood.
Big Boy.
Yeah, so basically that interview is sort of what set off everything with the media. Again, for folks who've been paying attention to Civic Cypher in the media, or Googling or anything like that, you can see it that grew like wildfire and put a national spotlight on the show. And since then, we've done tons of press regarding that one issue, but we never want to lose sight of the focus of the show, which is to impact relationships across racial lines and to positively impact the disparities that we find in Black and brown communities all too often. And so we appreciate Big Boy for letting us sit down with him. We appreciate him for letting us use the audio. And stick around because we have another great interview coming up right after this with Isaac Hayes III, the founder of the social media app Fanbase. So stay tuned.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists with journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
So welcome back to Civic Cypher. I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are listening to Civic Cypher.
Yes, indeed. Once again, as promised, it is time to bring on our special guest, a man who is a hero in both of our books.
This is Ebony Excellence, folks.
Yeah. So that's why we didn't need to even throw to that. You know, we did mention before on the show a platform called Fanbase, and of course we're gonna get into that a little bit more. But this man, you know, for the biggest part of his life, I'm sure, was associated with his famous father. Obviously, he's made incredible contributions to the culture that we know and love and we call hip hop. But really, nowadays, he is making a difference, giving us our voice, operating in a media space, specifically a social media space. And, you know, we are incredibly proud of him. He's a hero of ours. Dare I say, even a mentor, someone that we look up to.
Absolutely.
And he joins us today, and we are honored to have Mr. Isaac Hayes III with us. Welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, you know, for folks that may have missed our other episode where we went in depth about Fanbase, talk a bit about what Fanbase is.
So Fanbase is the intersection of social media and what I call like microcasting or micro subscriptions. Mm-hmm. It is the first social media platform that allows you to have a follower and a subscriber on the same page via in-app purchase. And that was a significant milestone for us in technology because no other app had done it. And fast forward to where we are now in 2022, subscriptions are all the rage. You know, Instagram is talking about subscriptions. Elon started his subscription-based service today. Twitter Blue launched, so they're giving away blue checks like it's nothing. But it's Fanbase is just that. I think the world is going to open up in a way that allows people to monetize their content if they so choose. So it's free to download, free to use. You can have followers and subscribers on the same page.
Yeah. So Q and I are both early adopters of Fanbase, and Q is an early investor in Fanbase
indeed.
As well. But one of the things that we felt was really important on this show is that this story is a story of Black ownership, Black leadership, and really telling our own stories using our own voice. And that's one thing that I really love. I know that fan base obviously exists for all people, just like any other social media platform, but the restrictions that are often put in place or the undervaluing that takes place in terms of Black creatives' contributions on the legacy sites, we'll call them, your Facebooks, your Twitters, those sorts of sites, had just gone on long enough. And I understand that, you know, you were inspired to create Fanbase because of a story about, I know it had to do with a kid in a Spider-Man costume. Why don't you share that with us?
Yeah, so this kid from Memphis, Tennessee, my hometown I was born in, went viral dancing in a Spider-Man costume in a GameStop. And I just shot him a message and said, congrats, young Memphis. And he reached back and asked if I was a manager, frantically trying to figure out how he could take advantage of this moment, because he got like to 300,000 followers pretty fast.
Wow.
And so I told him I don't really do artist management like that, but I said, you know, he wanted to have a meeting. I said, well, send me your number and I'll think about it. And that was like in March, right? And then fast forward to, I didn't really talk to him again until probably the next year. Sounds crazy, but I left that conversation was like, yo, he's having the moment of his life and doesn't know how to make money off of it, because there's a very, I guess, wild and risky way that people go viral and try to turn that into a business. It's inefficient. You know what I'm saying? You go viral, you try to turn that into a business, hopefully you end up on Love and Hip Hop, or you know, you get brand endorsements or something like that. So I said, people need to be able to subscribe to him like you subscribe to Netflix, because people need to be able to learn how to dance like him.
Okay.
And so that was the birth of Fanbase, where I was like, wow, you can have followers and subscribers on the same page. That's it. That's the idea. I can follow you, but if I want, you can post content and I can subscribe to you. And then that was the idea that kicked it off.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's incredible. I've seen you talking about the inefficiencies and the lack of equity with regards to credit, attention, and financial gain to Black creators, you know, on those legacy apps, on the TikToks and the Instagrams, these businesses that we've made, that we've grown the evaluation for. We're the reason that these places are cool. They take the culture, they take the ideas, and then they profit from it, and we don't. I watched you take kind of the frustration of that, the idea that you just said you came up with this young man, young Memphis, and turn it into something that's living and breathing. Like, we're looking at you. Our listeners can't see it, but you're sitting in the headquarters of Fanbase. I don't know if it's as incredible to you as it is to us, because I remember when it was an idea and then you let us all invest in it. And I remember I had a conversation with my mom, and when I told her what it was about, she was so excited. My mother from Macon, Georgia, you know what I mean? Having a conversation with her son about Black tech and essentially creating our own capital, it really, really blew her away. How has that experience felt for you?
It's a surreal experience. It's the joy and honor of my life to be able to build something like this. It was unexpected. I was managing my dad's estate and still doing music from here, you know, from time to time, but I've always loved social media, and I've been able to use it in a way to effectively communicate to the masses. What I recognize, which isn't a bad thing, is that social media is kind of like a shared experience between people where we mimic each other.
Okay.
You know, you do the dance, I do the dance. You do the challenge, I do the challenge. Advertising is the part of social media that that's messed up for the Black community, and I'm gonna tell you why. Not making this about race, but the overall goal of a platform like a TikTok or an Instagram is to generate ad revenue. So therefore, as many eyeballs on content that they can run ads in between is beneficial to their business. So therefore, it behooves any of these platforms to have very, very famous white creators, because that is a larger audience of advertising that they can serve to, rather than very, very famous Black creators. Okay. So what happens is our community creates the trends and the culture and the dances, And then these other creators duplicate them, which is not a problem at all, because it's just we copy each other. But to the benefit of the platform and then the creator that copies, they see all the rewards and the benefit of you know, the financial gain from doing that, and the originators get left in the dust. So this has been a great process for me to start from something that's in my head that I feel like I can help our community and help everyone monetize, but especially the people that are underserved, from it coming from an idea to building it and it actually works. Because, you know, the first thing that I guess there's an assumption in Black tech, like, or technology sometimes, like, if we build it, do it work? Does right. it log on? Does it crash? Like, yeah. does it, you know, it's like, it, you know, and Fanbase is a really solid product built by an amazing team. So I'm fortunate to have them and love working with them.
Yes, sir.
So one of the things that I know is very frustrating for any content creators, and, you know, we're focusing on, you know, Black creators, which, you know, Q and I are with the show Civic Cypher, is trying to best the algorithm. Now, this show exists on radio stations, but obviously we have to play the social media game as well. And these algorithms, they're sometimes they help out. Obviously, in recent, you know, weeks, we've seen the benefit of that. But there were years of toiling in the dark, and had not a fortuitous series of events happened, we may still be toiling in the dark with respect to social media. And I think that Fanbase has kind of addressed the algorithm issue with some of these legacy platforms as well. So can you speak to that as well?
Yeah, so it's not necessarily an issue. It is the design and function of platforms that are built off advertising, mm-hmm. right? So what that means is, and I say this all the time, when I ask this question, and the light bulb goes off in your head. And sometimes, you know, something is so simple that you don't think about it. When you think about it, you're like, yeah, it makes sense. I tell people, why would Instagram let you reach 1 million people when they're about to charge Target and Walmart to reach 1 million people through ads?
Yeah. Wow.
Because if you could reach 1 million people through your generic post, the post that you make, then Walmart and Target would just come and pay you, and right. they would never run ads on Instagram.
Right.
So for that very reason, they have to suppress everybody's content down to a level that allows them to make money from these brands. Mm-hmm. So someone like Kim Kardashian that has 330 million followers, that's three times the visibility and the viewership of the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl only comes on one day a year for 4 hours, and they charge $7 million for a commercial. So if Kim Kardashian could reach 300 million people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, she could charge $21 million a post and never have to do anything again for the rest of her life, because she has more visibility and reach than major network television stations. Take the word following and turn it into viewership, and then it all makes sense. Like, oh, she has 300 million viewers.
Wow.
That is insane. That's an insane amount of, that's the population of the United States of America.
Yeah.
At the click of a button, going live, 300 million people, posting a photo, 300 million people, posting a video, 300 million people. That's insane. So that is why the algorithm, that's why content is suppressed, because nobody would ever run ads. I mean, it's like brands would be able to reach the exact demographic that they want to reach. If I know somebody has 20 million followers, that's 17 years old, that's Black, that likes video games and Oreo cookies, I'm going to go on his page. Mm-hmm. But they have to go through Facebook and Instagram to figure all that kind of stuff out. And that's how they do it. So we don't do that at Fanbase. I want to lift the veil of suppression off, because I'm more focused on subscription than ads. And because subscription is the future of what social media is going to be.
And I think that that's very important. Having a Black man give his Black insight to a business and being able to create something that speaks to, maybe needs is a strong word, but sort of the shortcomings that we find in our Black communities, that is able to address that. And I think that the bigger picture here is that Black ownership really matters. I think this is what I want our listeners to take mm-hmm. away from it. When we say support Black businesses, we're not just talking to Black people. We're talking to all people because ideas like this deserve to exist because there are white creators that would benefit from the same business model as well.
Absolutely.
So in your own words, I want you to speak because you've built something from the ground up. Speak to the importance of Black ownership, Black thought, Black entrepreneurship, you know, Black leadership, those things that are, that obviously are very important and instrumental in getting this endeavor off the ground.
Well, one of the things that I'll say is being Black is probably the biggest gift that a person on this planet could have, mm-hmm. being an African-American person. And I know, you know, I've had conversations about the lineage and the legacy and the heritage of Black people, mm-hmm. but African-Americanism, as I call it, is the hottest ish on the planet.
Yeah.
Like it is the hottest thing on the globe.
Sure.
It is literally impossible for you to market and promote anything as being cool, not sentimental, exciting, or adventurous, but cool without the assistance of Black people.
Yep.
You need our music, you need our slang, you need our dance, you need our fashion, you need one of our top artisans, one of our top, you know, musicians to sell cool, and cool is what sells things.
Mm-hmm.
So being Black is like, we are the cool of the world, as I say it. And so what comes with that is innovation. And so we innovate industries, we freestyle infrastructures off the top of our head and don't understand that we're actually doing those things.
Yeah.
Wow. I've said this a bunch of times before. Shout out to Grandmaster Flash. I had a chance to talk to him about a month ago. And I always tell people, I use him as an example. And I say, look, man, the first time you DJed on two turntables and a mixer, someone should have pulled you to the side and said, do not show an MF or what you just showed me. Let's go figure out how to make turntables and mixers. Because everybody that's going to do this is going to need turntables and mixers. So you can innovate, you can, and so he created DJ culture to the point now that his innovation is in one device, one piece of hardware that Pioneer sells.
Yeah.
So Serato and Techniques and Pioneer own DJ culture when it should be owned by all those original DJs. All those guys should be billionaires just sitting back in their 60s, chilling like, yo, we invented this and we innovate that culture. The same thing with automobile culture. It's like we're the ones that did TVs in the headrests. You see Maybachs with those rims, LED lights in the ceilings,
wow.
really amazing sound systems. But we don't own a Ford, we don't own Chrysler, we don't own Mercedes, we don't own any of the automobile companies. And then you get to social media. We give our dances to TikTok, our clapbacks to Twitter, you know, our skits to Instagram, but we don't actually own the infrastructure of any of these things that we make. And so it's time that there is a Black-owned social media company that a social media platform that serves the benefit of all users, because given the current construct of social media, it's an exploitive relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
They let some people through. There's some stars that make it, you know, Khaby Lame, shout out to Khaby Lame and the people that you know become household names off social media, but as a whole, there are billions and billions of dollars in ad revenue being created, and none of that is ever finding its way back to the Black community. Not a dime of it.
So Ramses mentioned earlier that I'm an early investor in Fanbase. Now,
yes, sir.
You know that there's a reason why you and I weren't invited to invest in Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. The fact that I'm an investor in Fanbase is a really, really cool thing that I'm ridiculously proud of. Kind of explain why the way that you're even, you know, generating revenue and raising money is so much different than the way other tech companies did their startup and their seed rounds.
So let's talk about accredited investors. That is a term given to wealthy people that meet a qualification to invest in early stage companies. It's a law. It was a law made by rich people to give them the opportunity to have the early access to the best investments. So the qualifications of being an accredited investor is you have to have a net worth in excess of $1 million minus your house,
mm-hmm.
or make over $200,000 a year for two consecutive years.
Mm-hmm.
The average American salary is about $47,000. Now, mind you, this law was put into effect in like 1933. So I don't care what color you were. This was really about wealth versus mm-hmm. poverty. So all the companies that you've seen throughout, you know, American history, the IBMs, the Microsofts, the Apples of the world, the Facebooks of the world were all invested, Uber were all funded by angel investors who are accredited. So I use an example of a guy named Oren Michaels. He put $5,000 into Uber in 2010. $5,000, cool money. When Uber IPO'd in 2019, 9 years later, his $5,000 was worth $24 million. Now, I'm not trying to be funny, but like I could get 10 of my friends together, we put $500 a piece and walk away with $2.4 million in 9 years.
Break that
right?
down.
But yeah. the irony in all of that is you don't have to be accredited to buy $5,000 worth of lottery tickets to win a $2 billion Powerball jackpot.
Sure.
However much money they made. You don't have to be accredited to go to Vegas and put $5,000 on a crap table or blackjack. But I can't put $5,000 into Facebook, Uber, none of these companies. So shout out to Congress at the time and Barack Obama creating this law called the Jobs Act that allows any person to invest in an early stage startup. So any company can raise up to $5 million in a calendar year, and the accredited investor rule is wiped out. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter your net worth. It doesn't matter. So I got introduced to Start Engine through a colleague of mine, a good friend of mine. And she said, you need to go to Start Engine because Fanbase is a people's product.
Right.
And when you think about social media, the users generally, you know, affect the value of the startup. No users, no startup. Everybody left Instagram today, it'd be worth $0.00. Clubhouse, $0.00. TikTok, same thing. So who better than to give opportunity in owning a platform than the people that actually use it? So I got accepted to Start Engine. Only 2% of people that apply to equity crowdfunding get accepted. I got accepted, learned a lot more about my business going through that process. And my initial goal was to raise $1 million. And I wound up raising $3.4 million in the first round that I did, which was amazing. And then I launched a second round about a year ago. And I raised $2.6 million, dollars. And I just launched the final. This is the last one I'm doing. The final round to invest in Fanbase. And we've already raised about $950,000 in 5 weeks. So I tell everybody that wants to own part of the future of social media, and the future tech giant of social media, you can invest in Fanbase and have ownership in this platform and use it. By going to startengine.com/fanbase and investing. Now, the minimum to invest is $245. That's the price. That's the price of a pair of J's.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's a steak dinner.
Incredible.
That's a steak dinner, Ruth Chris, to get you some equity in a startup that has an upside and a very, very bright future that we're working hard to continue to scale. And so I've done these three rounds to give people the opportunity to have equity in the company. But like now, we have to move to that level where we do let institutional investors in because they cut the checks that are big. They cut the $20 million checks, the $40 yeah. million dollar checks in one fell swoop. And that's how you scale faster.
Yes, sir. So I invested in round one and two. Ramses said, do not close round three until you let him invest. And I'm about to invest for the third time.
You better hurry up for this round close.
I got you. Don't worry about it.
Because what happens is when I do amazing programs like these, we see a spike in investment.
Okay.
So, you know, like one time, like when I did the Breakfast Club, I raised probably $2 million in 24 hours.
Wow.
So it was like that fast because it just went viral. So thank you for having me on the program to even let people know that they have a chance to invest in opportunities like this, because these raises tend to go viral. And the fact that we're almost halfway there in like 5 weeks, when typically they give you about 6 months to raise the money, is incredible. So
I got to say this before I pass it back to Ramses. I see people complaining all the time about us not having our own space. You probably see me tagging you and Fanbase every time I see somebody say that. Why do you think people are so slow or so hesitant when they're begging for it? You know, Ramses and I have this conversation all the time. We watch people say, man, we really need to have our own. We really need to have our own space and our own platform. Why do you think now that it exists, we still have to urge to get people to come over, especially when it's a position that would be far more financially equitable for them? Like I see you letting people know how much money they're missing out on by allowing all of that fan base to live somewhere else?
Two things. For the Black community, it is unfortunately part of our, I don't want to say programming, but part of our existence in this country has been the spaces that we don't feel welcome in, we fight harder to be a part of.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, you know, tell us you don't want us to shop in Gucci and we want to buy more Gucci. Tell us you don't want us on Twitter and we fight harder to stay on Twitter. Tell us you take my TikTok away because of, you know, the fact that my butt is bigger than the next girl's, but I'm gonna fight harder to stay on TikTok. When to the direct left or right of you, there's an alternative place where there is none of that, and that happens. So people fight hard. I call it the velvet rope mentality. It's like, you know, you ever been like, you could go to a nightclub on a Tuesday and then come back on a Saturday and they got a velvet rope over in the same vinyl furniture, and you gonna break your neck to get on the other side of that rope. And that's what people do, is like, when you put those barriers to entry, people fight harder to get in. It's just psychologically. As a human, we all have these dysfunctional relationships with social media, like real relationships with people, like girlfriends and boyfriends. And what I mean is, like, the platform, I hear so many people complain about Instagram and TikTok not treating them well and how they do them wrong, but they stay. It's wild. It's like, yo, okay, then leave. But we're afraid to leave because we've been in this relationship since 2012. If you've been on Facebook, you know, you might have been on Facebook 15 years. How are you gonna break up with somebody after 15 years? That's a marriage. You are in a relationship with your Instagram page and you don't even know it. You know what I'm saying? Instagram came out in 2010. You 12 years in. If you started in 2010, you started in 2000, you know, you're in. You know what I'm saying? You are all the way into this thing. So what I tell people is, date apps. You should be dating apps. And what I mean by that is, you should never have loyalty to one app over another app, including fan base. Don't have loyalty, because every app isn't for every person. And I use examples like DJ Khaled. If DJ was faithful to MySpace and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, he would have never met Snapchat, which wound up being the love of his life. It changed his life. If he would have said, "Nah, man, I'm sticking with Instagram. I'm gonna stick beside her," right? You know, he would be like, "I'm gonna stick beside IG, man. IG been there for me." And he was like, "Nah, I'm going out with Snapchat. Hey, Snap," and they clicked.
Yeah.
And it propelled his career in a matter of 2 or 3 years to the you know, the pinnacle of success of his entire life. And then I think of someone like Jason Derulo, who as a musician was probably all but forgotten about in the realm of popular music. He's still as talented as he ever was, but he got on TikTok and became a superstar on TikTok. He's one of the most popular people on TikTok.
Yeah.
And so if he would remain faithful to the MySpaces and the Instagrams and the Snapchats, he would have met TikTok, and TikTok changed his life. So date apps. You never know what app is going to change your life. Someone's going to get on Fanbase and have a relationship with Fanbase that blows all the other relationships away, and it's going to be one that is a financial gain. And it's going to be like, oh, I really been BSing. I could have been over here making millions.
Where the money is.
Yeah. And I've been giving away my content for free for years, and now I'm over here making money.
You know, I like what you said about dating apps, because, you know, one of the things that I don't know how true this is, but one of the things that I learned about from, you know, the legacy platforms is a thing that is called shadow banning. Again, I don't know how real this is, but effectually what it means is that you'll put some content out and you'll notice an appreciable drop in engagement for this specific piece of content.
Yes, sir.
Let's say you put out something and it misrepresents what you think, and then you follow up with another post that corrects, you know, people's impression that they may have taken away from it, and it doesn't get the same sort of reaction that the initial post got. And so there's no reason, it's not necessarily algorithmic, because you can point to certain keywords, or maybe there's, you know, there's things that you wrote in the title, this sort of thing. And I think that, you know, to your point, having someone else exact control over exactly how you interact with your followers, the degree to which you can reach people, the amount of influence that you're able to have over your own subscribers, that is giving away way too much power. Dating these apps, it takes the power back. As you mentioned, Jason Derulo being one of the biggest folks on TikTok. I have a son, my older son. He went viral on TikTok, and it's a video of him playing some really dirty music for his dad, and that blew up millions of views, right? And everyone's on there like, oh my gosh, Jason Derulo. It looks like Jason Derulo. I look nothing like this guy, but this is what everyone was saying.
I was kind of saying Derulo. You look like Jason Derulo, though. I was thinking that, but go ahead.
That's funny. Well, anyway, on the app, everyone's, you know, tagging him, and then I go to his page and I see how many followers he has. And I'm like, oh my God. So absolutely to your point, you know, I love that. Before we let you go, I want to make sure that you let folks know where they can get Fanbase if they want to invest, and that, you know, and I'll say this, it is open to all investors or all people. It's Black owned, but it is a brilliant site. But please let folks know where they can go and how they can invest and how to download the app.
So Fanbase is on iOS and Android. We're in over 180 countries. It's incredible for me to get on an app and see someone from India using one of our verticals called Flix, which is like our TikTok,
yeah,
and making videos. Like, this is crazy to me. It's like people are utilizing all the functionality. Fanbase has six amazing verticals: photos and videos, which we call posts, stories, live, audio, Flix, which is short form video like Reels and TikTok, and Fanbase Plus, which is long form content, your Netflix, your place to put your podcast or your show, and everybody can monetize. And if you want to put that content behind a paywall and have subscribers, you can do that. We just actually launched a brand new feature today. I don't know if you guys saw, but you can actually take a YouTube link that's unlisted and share that and put that behind a paywall. So now YouTubers, and let me tell you something about podcasting and podcasters out there. If you do a podcast and you have video component to it, monetize your video component, especially Black creatives. I say this all the time. I have a friend of mine who's been in the apparel space for over a decade, and we've been working together. And he recently started helping podcasters and comedians sell their content through subscription and utilizing tools like Fanbase, but other platforms like Patreon. But he didn't know about Fanbase, and he didn't even know that I'd gotten this far with it because I hadn't talked to him since before the pandemic. But let me tell you, people that are not Black are making $200,000 a month off a podcast, and they may have 30,000 subscribers, 40,000 subscribers. They're making $2.4 million a year, and you would walk past them and never know that they're making that type of money. And the issue is, people that look like us give our content away for free, right? And then expect to get paid for it. So it's like the mixtape game. It's like, I'm gonna do 100 dances and one gonna go viral, and then I'm gonna make up for all of that, like, by doing that one. You know, you gave away all your hot stuff, and now you got to turn that into a business, which is the most inefficient thing to do. So utilize Fanbase. It is a tool for the planet. I keep saying subscriptions are going to take over the planet. It's going to be bigger. People subscribing to other people is going to be bigger than Netflix and Disney Plus and Hulu combined. There's 7.5 billion people on the planet with a smartphone, and there's nothing in between you and them except two clicks of a button or a face scan or a fingerprint. That is an incredible amount of reach.
Yes.
So you can invest in Fanbase on StartEngine. Go to startengine.com/fanbase to invest. The minimum is $245 to invest. This is the last time. So I'm telling everybody, I want people to own. The reason why I want people to own part of these platforms is because, especially from the standpoint of being African American and knowing our value that we bring to these platforms, Bob Johnson created the most Black millionaires in history when he sold BET. I want to obliterate that one day.
Wow.
By people that invested in Fanbase. I want to say, like, I made 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 millionaires, because these tech companies, mind you, you know, get to valuations of $300 billion, $400 billion. Fanbase is valued at $85 million now. We started at 20. We were valued at 50 in our second round. We're valued at $85 million in our third and final round of equity crowdfunding. But Fanbase is easily $100 billion, $200 billion company. You know what I'm saying? So imagine going from that and then some sort of acquisition or IPO, and then everybody makes all this money. I don't care what color you are, you've invested. But especially in our community, because we do the heavy lifting of making these platforms incredibly valuable. So it'll be the largest distribution of wealth to Black people in the history of America. It's like, all right, you want to talk about reparations, investing in tech startups and walking away with a big check is one way to get there.
Sir.
And you can control it because the users directly affect the value of the company. Meaning, oh, okay, let's hypothesize some dude starts a social media platform and allows everybody to invest. And then we invest and then we move on the platform and then the value of the platform goes up. So our investment goes up. Who would do that? What? Who'd be crazy enough to do that? Who'd be crazy enough to let people invest for $245 and try to make a startup go, you know, be $100 billion? I know a guy, but, you know.
Sounds crazy.
It's like, yeah.
Well, we love it.
I love crazy.
Really proud of you. Obviously, we're on Fanbase. You can find us at Civic Cypher. I am Q Ward at Ramses Ja. Tap in with us. Ike Dirty, go ahead and drop your Fanbase handle as well.
It's at Isaac Hayes 3. You can find me over there. And if you're looking for me on all the other socials, I'm not leaving those as well because I'm in those relationships too. I got more girlfriends. I got more, you know what I'm saying? I got more than one lady when it comes to social media. And I love them all.
I like that. Well, Isaac Hayes III, thank you for coming on to Civic Cypher, man. We appreciate your insight. Let's have you back again real soon, please.
Absolutely.
And that's going to do it for us here at Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You have listened to Civic Cypher once again. We appreciate y'all.
And until next week.
All right. Peace.
With orders from headquarters, behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander / beat expander, here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Listen to Armando Puentes every Sunday from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., playing the best in Tejano mixing with some traditional conjunto, as well as mariachi music and public affairs pertaining to the Latino community. That's Armando Puentes.